Austin, I know that I've told you about, like, I had the toilet paper issue that led to me becoming like a hanky person recently. And I feel like the ways that I'm kind of becoming an old timey person are increasing due to these COVIDs. So
I just want to tell everyone who's like not privy to this of like Jamie's like Naples like grandfather sweatsuit attire, in addition to her like talking about noises from the neighbors in a way that you feel like she's 75 and looking over the fence. Like
there were explosions and helicopters, and that's not what I'm talking about right now, but it was a scary night.
Okay. Okay, there were other things. There were other things. Anyway.
Anyway, so the latest thing that has happened in my building is that several of my neighbors clearly have COVID, been having parties, now they have horrible coughs, but
I don't like this.
The only laundry machines, there's one washer and one dryer, are out of service for the building now. So my girlfriend and I have started doing laundry in the bathtub.
Oh, next level. Okay. It's fine.
And so we are now hand washing rounds of things. And let me tell you, like, it's fucking disgusting. I would highly recommend that everyone give it a try once or twice, because I feel like years and years worth of dirt that laundry machines didn't take care of are like finally coming out now.
Okay, this is like a fucking TikTok trend though. Like, is Maddie watching TikTok and watching how people are doing this, like, there's a thing that it's called about like doing some sort of deep. Are you guys doing that? Are you guys like on this level?
So that is how she learned like the best ways to do our laundry. Because like, if we're totally honest, like I'm not doing the bulk of the hand washing.
No, don't get it twisted.
But
you're not doing it, but it's a major inconvenience and it's gross. Go on.
It was my idea.
It was your idea to do the chores this way and to have her execute them. Great.
It wasn't specifically my idea that she would do them, but yes, she is on TikTok learning about how to do hand laundry, and it's called something like how cottagecore is a thing, but it, you know, people are trying to go back to old-timey stuff. Like colonial house and shit, prairie house. What was that we were talking about recently?
Frontier House, the PBS special. Also, 1800 House, which was the best of the franchise.
That
series.
One was amazing. But it was not inspired by that. It was inspired
by you creating new home chores.
Yep.
To not do.
Yep. And I will say that I want to, but I'm not getting crazy about the water usage. Like a part of me wants to try to create like a system where like the water is saved and recycled and we use like a minimum amount due to droughts. But like, you know, I can't do everything. I can't figure out how to do hand laundry.
You
and
can't
also
come up with more complicated tasks for Maddie to do on your behalf. I'm just going to go ahead and say she's going to be so happy she has a recording of this, of you like fully confessing to this being the lifestyle.
It is.
Listen, don't get me started on how Jamie was maybe going to have Maddie make their dog like homemade food. Okay?
I wanted to make it. I was going to make the food. I wasn't suggesting that she should do it. However, it is how the suggestion landed. I will acknowledge that.
I'm just going to say, I think that's up for debate and interpretation with the parties that live in your home. And also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome. Soul searching to find their true self.
I mean, that is this podcast. So.
It's basically an SVU episode with help from talking rats.
This month in December, please stop douching your genitals.
Who's participating in this study that's like, here, for like the $30, I like came in this cup so 30 different women could taste it. I'm like, who's that guy?
So it fit like a tiny belly shirt with like cap sleeves. And when the ambulance came, like that's what he was wearing.
You're saying all sorts of crazy shit now.
I'm going to peak in high school and then die.
I do believe in fairies. I do. Is franchising our platform? We're franchising it, okay? Welcome. Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, whatever TikToks Jamie's making her girlfriend instigate, we can't know, in order to determine why people are the way that they are, That's Jamie Ryan giving up on water conservation in Los Angeles.
And that's Austin Williams in Chicago. I hate to, that's a terrible sentence that's attached with my name now, giving up water conservation. I'm tempted. I mean, I'm tempted to collect the dirty water. That's all I'm saying.
That's the most you thing you could have ever actually said.
Listen, I'm an Aquarius, but that's not what I'm talking about tonight.
That's not what we're talking about. No. That's not what we're talking about tonight. Today, good morning, good evening, whenever you're listening. And on that note, it's not just us.
Oh, my God. Which is
very exciting. Oh, my God. For the third time, and we're super hyped about this, the third and not the last.
We haven't done this in a while.
It's been a minute. Honestly, this wouldn't have been such a minute, but guys, I don't know if you're aware there's a pandemic that has some people doing laundry in their bathtub, okay? So, on that note, we have our sweet friend Thomas with us here. So excited to have him. Thomas and I are actually old-time homies. We met in college, and we didn't meet in, like, the classroom or, like, the party sense. We met because we worked together. Shout out to really low-paying jobs at a chain retailer. God bless. But also, like, maybe my personal favorite work experience in, like, maybe my whole life. Like, I don't think I've ever collectively worked with a group of people that I enjoyed as much as I enjoyed this job. And, you know, we worked together, we partied together, we were just dumb together. But I will also say, never have I ever been separated from a coworker repeatedly the way that I was separated from Thomas, because we would continuously stop, like, folding things and just be, like, talking to each other. And our managers, mind you, are the same age as us and, like, best friends, right? And so we would be, like, in separate areas of the store, and our sweet friend Elliot would be like, yeah, I would just watch them, like, creep closer and closer together, because they'd be, like, talking to each other about something. And our store was a split level, and he's like, somehow both of them are, like, on the split and neither one's on the floor they're supposed to be on. I was like, listen, there was no one in the store, okay? We were just doing our thing. But that is how we met and how we fell in love. A good, God, 10 years ago at this point, is that right? Am I right?
Yeah, no, you are right. That was 10 years ago.
That's crazy.
I think it was 10 years ago. This year will be 10 years.
I think it was.
Oh my God, friendiversary?
We met. Friendiversary. Oh, our decade this year. No, I think that's right, because I think I was, like, a freshly minted 21. So, but that's how Thomas and I met and fell in love. But Thomas, do you want to tell anybody listening things about yourself? Introduce yourself in a way that's more dignified than you used to fold shirts with me in, like, Indiana.
Through Austin's eyes? Yeah, through your own lens?
Yeah, of course. Well, hi, everyone. I am Thomas. I am a longtime listener of the podcast, longtime fan of both of these ladies, and super, super excited to be here. Yeah, I know I've known Austin for like 10 years now. And
yeah, well, now we've clarified that.
I'm glad you brought up the story with Elliot, because if you didn't, I was going to bring it up. He was constantly separating us. It was quite problematic. And,
I mean, as someone personally who doesn't really normally, like, necessarily, like, get along with people I work with, I'm just going to own that. I just really think it's special that we were, like, so engrossed that, like, I was, like, getting in trouble, you know?
Yeah, I think we truly had, like, a stepbrothers moment where we were like, did we just become best friends?
We 100% did. And I also think we were, like, an unlikely match. Like, I don't think anyone understood how and why we were obsessed with each other, but we just immediately were.
Yeah, I don't even think we understood it. And listen, it's been a love story ever since. And, you know, Jamie, I feel like I know even better than I should because of the podcast and because of
You'll
my friendship
that.
With Austin. Yeah. I will, you know, we'll have more of that in the future. I think I've collectively hung out with Jamie maybe like twice in
I
person.
Think.
Yeah. Anytime we were like both in Chicago. So yeah, but a little bit more about me, I guess, is I live here in Chicago. I'm Midwest born and raised. I am a Taurus sun, Aquarius moon, Scorpio rising, if you're into astrology. So have at me. Something's going on with Uranus right now. And with my Aquarius placement, I don't know what's going on in my life anymore. So it's fine. But anyway, longtime retail worker. But yeah, that's a little bit about me. Oh, and I have a cat named Petty that I'm obsessed with.
Oh, I love this. He's my fellow cat parent, which, you know, I think is enough to unite anyone. But we're like, we're thrilled you're here.
Yeah.
And we can't wait to get into it. So kind of on that note, Jamie, what are we talking about?
So Thomas is here to help us unpack tonight. To join in, we will be dealing with the topic of living with HIV and debunking some stereotypes. We want to help facilitate conversations about HIV and want to figure out like how to be sensitive and maybe like inform ourselves a little bit on how to talk about it. And so Thomas will be here to help us with that. And thank you so much for doing this. That's amazing.
No, yeah, of course. Thank you guys for having me on the show. I'm super excited to talk about this topic. It's something that personally affects me and something that I'm very passionate about and want more people to learn, you know, hi, if you have HIV, that doesn't mean that you are dirty or anything like that. So I'm super excited to talk to you guys more about that.
Absolutely.
So in general, I think we've talked about this in kind of different contexts about all sorts of things on the show. And I think like through Jamie's lens, we've talked about kind of the quote unquote coming out or disclosure of being gay. I think we've talked about it in the lens of, you know, a lot of different kind of people we've studied, quote unquote, or looked into.
Or even in post-Christianity, I think there's an element of coming out like when you lose religion.
Like, I don't love Jesus. Yeah, definitely. We talked about that with Matt Johnson for sure. And I think there's a lot too in terms of like coming about also like a specifically like a health diagnosis. And I feel like there are always stories around this and kind of people's perception and oftentimes like that's the narrative for somebody. But I kind of wanted to just jump in and start there and certainly not end there because I think oftentimes that's kind of how narratives start and end and all they include.
And that's incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely it is. But for, I guess, better or worse and getting the Band-Aid ripped off, do you want to tell us a little bit about your experience with, you know, diagnosis and kind of how you've handled disclosure in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, and I'm, you know, I'm glad you brought up like coming out when you're gay. It's like you already have to do this once. It's incredibly nerve-wracking.
Or more than once.
You know, you work up the courage to finally tell one person, let alone, well, you, first of all, you have to tell yourself, you have to work up that courage to tell yourself that you're gay.
Sure.
And then you're like, okay, now I have to tell other people or I'm just going to have to keep lying all the time. And that sucks. So I think for me, you know, with my initial diagnosis and then just telling people afterwards, I always kind of refer to it as my second coming out because I had to be the feeling of telling people that I was positive felt very similar to how it felt when I first started telling people that I was gay.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, you know, the nerves, like I felt like I was going to throw up. My face turned bright red, super hot. My heart is like pounding through my chest. And the first person I ever told was my mom and like that I was gay. So it was like a very nerve-wracking thing. And, you know, I told her the night before I left for Europe for 3 months. So I gave her plenty of time to marinate on it before I came back.
Not strategic at all. It's fine.
Can I ask how old you were? Just curious.
I was 18 when I came out to my mom. I feel like I had accepted that I was gay when I was probably like 16.
Mm-hmm.
But when you grow up in a suburb of Indianapolis, so Indiana farm town, you're not so quick to shout it from the rooftops. That happened when I got to college. But that same feeling that I felt then was very much how I felt when I first started telling people that I was positive. So when I found out it was in 2019, it was right before I turned 29 and I had gone into like an some symptoms of, you know, of an STI. And I was like, I should go get this checked out. So I went to my handy urgent care because I didn't have a doctor in Chicago at the time. And, you know, waited for the results, got a phone call. They were like, oh, you need to come in for us to give the results. And I was at work when I got this phone call.
Ooh.
Yeah. Was that
not great?
Not great. Not great. Should have just not picked up the phone. Should have waited for a better time to return that call. But, you know, hindsight is 2020.
As someone who's also gotten health news while at work, I just like, don't answer the phone. Like, do it later. I don't know what to say. It's just like, if you can avoid it, avoid it.
Yeah. Like, honestly, don't answer the phone at work from a phone number. You know what? Just don't do it. Just don't answer the phone at work.
Just don't do it.
Yeah. So I, of course, the dumbass that I am, took that call. Got off the phone, panicked, went to my boss and like started crying. And I was like, I have to go. I was like, I have to go. So I like jumped on the train, get all the way back to my neighborhood, then get in my car, drive to the urgent care. And I think this was kind of my first experience with poor bedside manner
or like
just some of the gaps that exist within our healthcare system when it comes to delivering medical results, but also like being a human being at the same time. And I could immediately tell this doctor was not ready or didn't have much experience giving someone this news. So they pulled, so I go, I get to the clinic and they call me back and they put me in this little room. And I was like, oh my God, I was like, fuck. It was like, part of me knew what was about to happen. I was like, I don't know why. I just like, part of me was like, you're about, I was like, it's happening. It's happening.
Yeah.
I was like, what you've been scared of and what you've been dreading, it's happening.
Mm.
And she comes back into the room and she, you know, tells me, she was like, so you did, you know, I got tested for all these STIs. She gives me those results. And she was like, and you also tested positive for HIV.
Mm.
I can still like, you know, kind of remember the room. I can kind of, I know, I remember the doctor's face. I probably won't ever forget that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember just like, everything just dropped and she was still talking to me. And it was like very similar to what happens in like a movie montage or something. You get bad news, everything else just kind of like I'm not hearing it. I'm just in my head at that moment. So I just remember leaving the clinic, getting in my car and I'm driving and Austin knows, will know this, but I was driving down Milwaukee Avenue. Cause you know, I just was, let's add salt to the wound and deal with 5 o'clock traffic on that street.
Yeah, for sure. It's a terrible street to drive down that time of day.
So I'm driving down there and I'm sitting there and I'm just like, oh my God. And I start crying and then I pull myself together and then I call Elliot, who is my best friend. And he was the first person that I told. And then I just kind of went home and just kind of sat there and whatever misery I was feeling at the time and kind of, and anyone that's gotten some sort of medical diagnosis that's life threatening or, you know, very threatening to your overall health, you start, well, if you're smart, you won't do this. If you're me, I immediately did this. You start getting on the internet.
Oh God.
And so I just remember reading all these things that were like, people with HIV can live for a long time, can live a normal life for a long time or longer than they used to. And I kept being like, well, what does that mean?
What, that's,
I
was like, so I'm not like, quantitative.
Yeah. I'm like, what's a long time? I'm like 10 years, 15 years. Am I going to die when I'm in my 50s? Am I going to be in my 70s? Like, you know, what's the answer here? So it was just like a big ball of emotion. So I think that was kind of how that first day went in terms of getting my diagnosis and, you know, just kind of dealing with all the feelings that followed after that.
Wow.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's so poignant to me, the part where you talk about like a normal, healthy life. Like, what does this mean? Because I remember when you told me, that was specifically one of the things that you said to me that I remember that you said, you know, I keep reading that they're like, can live a normal, healthy life. And like, what do they mean? And it's so startling. And to the narrative of hearing, you know, in a doctor's office from someone who doesn't necessarily seem like equipped or practiced in, you know, delivering this kind of health news. What was the moment like? Were there resources offered or were you just kind of left to your own devices of like, we can refer you, we can, you know, here's a brochure with somebody's face on it,
or
like
go home
and Google this, like, what was it? Because I think that's some of the scariest shit. And that's how we end up on the internet trying to figure out what the hell normal and healthy means.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was no pamphlet, but they kind of walk you through a little bit of the process. And so with my diagnosis, they were like, okay, so we are going to put you into contact with someone that can find you an infectious disease doctor. So if you have HIV, if you think you have HIV, if you've just been, you know, tested as positive, your next step is you're going to find an infectious disease doctor because that's what they study. They're the ones that are going to know like what drugs to put you on, what to test for and things like that. So they took care of all of that for me, which was a godsend. That was great because like I was not in the mindset to like look for a doctor because looking for a doctor sucks no matter what kind of doctor you're looking for. It's just a pain in the ass.
100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, again, goes back to our healthcare system. Obviously that's for another episode, but it just kind of, that part of it, they took care of for me. So, all right. So it's like, I tell Elliot, and I immediately, like that same day, got a call from whatever source they used to find this doctor. And they set up an appointment for me. They find me a doctor. You know, everything's like, okay, things are moving. Like, obviously, when you find out you have HIV, you want to start treating it as soon as possible. And you want to find out, like, how long you've had it. You know, what your CD4 count is, like, just you want to get all the tests done. So I was sent to a hospital that's like a Catholic run hospital here in Chicago to an infectious disease doctor. And, you know, I had my friend take me because I was just like, I don't want to go alone. I don't want to be by myself. Like, I need someone there with me. I need some.
And first of all, that's so effing smart. As someone who has gone to like rough doctor's appointments and been like, I can do this by myself. Oh my God. Never afterwards been like, that was a good idea.
And as someone who hasn't had a ton of rough doctor's appointments, I will say also that like, I refuse to go get an STI test alone. Couldn't do it. So I feel that.
Yeah. It's just like,
no, it's very real.
Yeah. It's just scary. So we get to that hospital, and this is something like I've said to anyone that I'm friends with or anyone that I've told my story to. And like, this may sound like, to me, it sounds kind of bad to say this, but this is how it felt like walking into a free clinic that was very understaffed, little resources. It didn't seem like the kind of place I wanted to get my health care at.
100%. This is very honest. I think we can be like concerned to say things like this because we're like, I don't want to sound like judgmental about the people who are going to a free clinic or X, Y, and Z. But I've had experiences where I've been like, well, what I've learned from this is like, I even need to like enter this building from like a different floor of the parking garage because coming in a certain way makes me feel anxious because it's not my healthcare vibe that I want to go into. That's just very honest. I think anybody who knows what you're talking about knows what you're talking about.
And it's not saying anything about the people who attend said clinic. It's about like the way that the clinic is run, staffed, put together, etc.
100%.
Exactly. So it's like I get to this clinic and the part of the hospital where I was being treated was for HIV patients. And it's like a tiny little room with like a receptionist. You know, the waiting area nowadays would not be considered COVID friendly whatsoever. It's very small and very cramped.
Sure.
And the receptionist was super nice, super friendly, whatever. It's like small talking with me, whatever. And then there you wait. I get brought into another room, an examination room, and I meet my doctor or who's potentially could be my doctor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know what sort of training she's gotten in terms of like bedside manner. I don't know if she normally treats HIV patients. I don't know. I don't know this woman's background.
Yeah.
But the entire time, she seemed very uneasy about being around me. And part of that could just be in my head. But to me, it just felt like you know, when you get examined by a doctor, they're like pressing into your, they're like pressing things and like listening to your lungs and they're touching you and like, you know, they're examining you. This examination felt very much like, I was like, this woman is scared to touch me.
Oh my God.
She seems uncomfortable around me. And then even then it's like, she starts asking me about like my sexual history and like asking me like my preferred sexual position, like am I a top or a bottom? But of course, she is a hetero cis woman. She does not know anything about this. So it just felt so uncomfortable. And there's more, there's probably way more things that I wanted to disclose to her about my sexual history, about like how, you know, who I could have potentially gotten it from, when it could have happened, things like that. And I just remember thinking like, this sucks. I was like, I don't feel comfortable right now. I'm like, I'm scared to ask my questions. Like they wouldn't let my friend into the room with me. And I was just like, I just like really am not about this.
First of all, that's weird that they wouldn't let, you know, a person you brought back in the room with you.
Yeah, I don't know what.
What a normal effing request.
Yeah, I don't know what that was all about, but. Anyway, she does a quick examination. She orders like I have to go get blood work done, but she tells me like the medication she wants me to start taking, which is like at that time it was like a newer drug recently approved in the United States. And it's by Gilead Sciences, which if you're not familiar with that, they pretty much run all of like the HIV treatment medication, but then they also have PrEP on their side. So it's a big pharmaceutical company. And they make their medication very, very expensive.
Yeah. And for anybody who doesn't know what PrEP is, it's just the preventative medication that people take so that they're not contracting HIV.
Yeah. It helps reduce your chances of contracting HIV from sex with your partner if you're not using condoms, or even if you are, if their condom malfunctions or something like that. So I get like my blood work done, there at the hospital, and then I'm sent on my way, to await the results. 'Cause at that point you want to find out, the levels that the virus is in your body and in your blood and like how it's affected, like your CD4 and like your T cells and like all of that stuff.
Right.
And then I started immediately taking medication. Well, I got a prescription. But afterwards, my friend took me out to lunch because I hadn't eaten since I had found out. Obviously, I was
How could you? Yeah.
Yeah. Stressful situation. And he starts telling me about his doctor. And my friend is also a member of the LGBTQ community. And he tells me about his doctor, which is a queer friendly doctor. Like it's doctor's office here in Chicago that caters to the queer community, and they specialize in HIV treatment and HIV research. So after that first kind of initial doctor's visit, I was like, well, I'm not going back to her. I was like, I'm really like, this is not it. So it's like, I go to this new doctor's office here in Chicago, and like, it's like, I walk in and I was like, okay, it looks like, you know, a nice doctor's office. Like the receptionist is a nice, friendly gay man. And he's like, you know, walking me through everything, takes me back to the waiting room. I meet my doctor, who is also gay. Wow. I meet the other nurses, who most of them are also gay or queer or like some sort of some, you know, people I can talk to, people that get what I'm going through, like people that I can, you know, be my, like, ask those like uncomfortable questions.
Thank God.
Yes. I was like, I need a doctor that I can have some shorthand with. Like, I don't want to have to explain what it means to be a bottom.
Right.
I don't want her. And I also don't want to be referred to as the receptive partner.
Oh my God.
So, which is also a term that my first doctor used.
I don't love that. I think in some ways it's so interesting, but when things get really like clinical and like kind of like sterile, the way like being like a receptive partner, as someone with a vagina who I guess would qualify as the receptive partner in like intercourse, I would never like to be referred to as the receptive partner.
The RP.
I think it like it dehumanizes you a little bit. It makes me feel like a kind of a piece, like that's
just a receptacle, sort of.
A garbage can.
So I meet this doctor, and obviously, it's it turned out to be a lot better. The bedside manner was a lot better. The shorthand was a lot better. And, you know, he actually took the time to really explain. And this doctor actually studied and did a lot of the research and a lot of the testing for the medication that I'm now on. So that felt really good to be working with someone that really knew what he was talking about. Like his focus is in HIV research. Most of the doctors that work at that doctor's office, that is something that they focus on or at least have experience with. And it just felt like a safer place to be. My doctor nowadays has, you know, given me advice on douching or, you know, whatever, like how to have safer sex. I don't know, just like things that just make it a lot easier to talk to him.
That's amazing though, because you would never get that, like, as someone who has a hard time finding doctors just because I don't like to do it. How did you find, or how did
I was like, well, it's not, I was like, let's just own
it.
Let's
it's
call
because
it
I don't like to do it. How did your friend find this doctor? Because I think if I were in this situation, I would not know how to navigate that in any way, how to find someone who's LGBTQ friendly.
I don't know exactly how he found this doctor. I think he might have actually started out going to, it's a health network called Howard Brown here in Chicago, which is also another queer focused health care system, healthcare advocate.
They do really great work. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he might have found that doctor through them or through someone there. I'm not exactly sure how he found this doctor, but anyone who's asked me since, I will very quickly and readily give that recommendation for this doctor's office because it really changed a lot of things for me and continues to do so.
Yeah, I'll say one thing. I'll like jump in on kind of finding that doctor, but I have, you know, queer female friends who it's important that like their gynecologist is like a queer woman, that's
Hi.
Like an important experience.
Yeah,
to
that's
have.
Important
and,
for
like,
me.
Yeah. Yeah, and absolutely do in Chicago. And I know, you know, obviously, like, less metropolitan areas, like, I'm sure, you know, choices are more limited. But I think, like, organizations or any kind of group that does advocacy for, you know, a group that you're looking for, maybe who they would suggest. So whether it's, like, LGBTQ or something else, maybe you're looking for like a person of color to be your doctor, whatever that is, you know, groups that do advocacy work are often like a really good place to find resources. And oftentimes through them, you can find things like that online.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Just in case you ever decide you want to find a doctor. I mean, I'm not here to tell
you think
you
I should
what to do. But
I should finally go to the gynecologist at 31. Is that something that you think should happen?
Listen, your body, your choice, Jamie. Your body, your choice. No, but I think the process of that and just talking about what is difficult about the experience of a diagnosis and what is helpful is so beneficial. And obviously, like, that can be different for everyone, but I think there's a lot of merit to understanding that, whether you're personally affected or, you know, someone you know is. And I guess I wanted to kind of pivot too in kind of the same lens of how things are helpful or not helpful when you initially want to disclose or feel like you need to share with someone in your personal life. And, you know, are there things that are helpful or not helpful, like pieces of information that you wish people like didn't feel entitled to ask about, or things that you wish people had more concern or care around but don't?
I think for me, when I first started telling people, and I was very selective with who I first started telling, because I think for me, a lot of it had to do with I was still managing my own emotions around what was going on with my health. And I didn't want to have to manage anyone else's emotions about
absolutely not
something that was happening to me. So I kept it the first people I told were very just close friends. And most of them, you know, kind of just, I think, instinctively knew I just like needed a hug or needed someone to cry to or needed someone to cry with. You know, Austin was one of those people for me. But I think as I've told more people, as I've, you know, I'm very, very open about it now. It's been 2 years since I found out almost. And it's never helpful. And even like that first doctor asked me this, we're like, oh, well, do you know who could have given it to you? Do you know what I mean? Like those sort of questions. And I know that part of it is like they're asking because they do have to let like this, like the health department know anytime that there's a positive diagnosis, because they want to essentially like track it down and try to stop the spread from another partner. So if like the person that gave it to me clearly I would hope didn't know that they had it, then they may still not know. So they want to try to like reach that person, let them know that they need to get tested, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
But there were just like certain questions like right off the bat that were just like, oh, do you know who gave it to you? How long have you had it? Do you know? You know, and I'm just like, I don't fucking know. I was like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And part of it was like made me feel bad about myself. Like I was kind of like, oh, am I sleeping around too much? I don't know who I could have gotten it from. I was like, it could have been like, you know, five different people. Like, I don't know. And so that was sometimes felt just a little pointed, even though it wasn't meant to be pointed. It just, in my head, I was like, this feels like an attack. I don't want to talk about this. Like, I don't want to discuss my sex life with you. I'm just letting you know, like, this happened. This is what's happening with me right now. And this is how I'm feeling. And I just need some support. But otherwise, no, there's not any. I like to try to be as open as I can about it, just because, like, I'll fully admit, before I got diagnosed, like, I was pretty ignorant to HIV health. You know, there were a lot of stigmas that I kind of like fell into before any of this happened. So now I try to just be very honest about it, because I'm like, I wish I had had more exposure and more, you know, understanding, you know, before all of this happened. But yeah, I don't think right now, I don't think there's anything that someone could ask me that I'd be like, oh, don't ask me that. I don't want to talk about it. But I think for other people, there probably are, you know, and obviously this is just from my perspective and my experience, but.
In telling other people, do you feel, because like, I don't know, this is something that I've struggled with, like just with sexuality coming out. I struggled with feeling like I owed people the truth about my sexuality. And I wondered if that was something that you also felt in coming out as being gay. And then if that translated at all to like, do you feel like you owe anyone who is not a sexual partner to disclose your health status? Like, do you feel like you owe them?
No.
I guess that's great.
I don't think that I owe them.
You don't? I mean, I don't think you do either.
Yeah, I think when it comes to like a platonic relationship, like if it comes up and there's been ways that I've told friends, like I was in a group setting, hanging out with some friends at someone's house. And we were, I don't know how we got on the topic. And it just came out of me. And I was like, well, I was like, when I found out that I was positive, like blah, blah, blah. And it was like, you know, anecdotally telling a story. Mm-hmm. And, but none of them knew that before that moment. And, you know,
stuff like that feels easier in those situations where you can just be like, this is relevant information to the story or whatever point I'm about to make. And I don't have to like set off a confetti cannon and yell it at you. It doesn't have to be a huge deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it was just kind of like it's on a need to know basis.
Yeah.
Like at the very beginning, For me, I don't necessarily equate it to like feeling like I need to tell people about my sexuality, because I think for me, it's pretty clear that I am a homosexual male. Or at least I like to think that about myself. But I don't. When it comes to platonic relationships, I haven't felt a huge need to tell anyone. I think it was more so I felt with like really close friendships and people that were like that were and still are really big parts of my life. I felt a need to tell them because they just didn't know what was going on with me and didn't know why I was acting the way that I was acting. And like that was starting to create like strains on certain friendships. And I didn't want that to happen either. So with a lot of people, I was just like, hey, this is what's going on. Like, this is what's happened. Like, I don't really want to get into a ton of the details right now. I'm just letting you know, like, this is why I've been acting this way. It has nothing to do with our relationship, our friendship, like, whatever it may be. It's just, like, I'm dealing with something right now.
Yeah. So you talked about, like, the process of kind of starting to tell people. You told your one friend first. And I wondered if, like, that conversation got easier over time, or if it, like, changed in maybe its confession quality. And I don't know if it ever had a confession quality, but coming out felt that way to me with sexuality. So I just wondered if that's something that got easier as you said it more than once.
Absolutely. So I like 100% had that confession feeling. And that's why I always, like I said before, always kind of refer to this as, like, my second coming out, because it just felt so similar. And, you know, when I first started coming out as gay, it just felt like a confession. And obviously, anyone who's ever come out as gay, and if you haven't yet, I hope that you do. And I hope that, you know, you will feel so much better once you do. Yeah. It's like you truly feel like this weight. Like, you're like, there's like a split second where you're like, even if they hate me after this, I feel so much better. Like, I just feel so much better.
The ulcerative colitis eases slightly.
Yes, just slightly.
Only slightly.
Yes. So I think for me, it's as much as being queer is a part of my identity and a part of who I am, and it's something that I very proudly identify with. That's the same thing with my status. I'm not ashamed of it. I will never, ever be ashamed of it. It's something that happened. It's something that I live with. It's, you know, it's there, and I'm not going to feel bad about it. I'm not going to let other people make me feel bad about it. And I think the only time it ever was a little bit difficult is obviously with romantic relationships. I think that was where it was harder to bring it up at first. And, you know, I'm on the apps and, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm trying to find love. Here I am. Should probably get off Grindr because I'm probably not going to find it on there.
Who knows?
So at first I, like, didn't update any of my, like, profiles, just, like, kept, I didn't put up there that I was negative, or I just, like, took my HIV status completely off of my profile. And I was like, if I meet someone and we're chatting and it's getting to that level where we, like, we might have sex, I will let them know. And then I started doing that, and I honestly went on a sabbatical from anything romantic for a while after I found out. It just was like, I was like, I need to deal with this, and I need to come to terms with what's going on. But after that, I just, you know, I tried the strategy of chatting with someone for a little bit and then letting them know. And I just would end up getting, like, ghosted a lot of times, or
I don't like that at all, but
you know what I mean? Like, you could just tell they very quickly lost interest. And this is when I started to realize,
or maybe even not to give them too much grace, but just, like, truly didn't know how to respond. Unlike these medical professionals that we were talking about at the top, instead of, like, having to say something because they're behind this wall of technology, they could just say nothing and vanish. And that doesn't feel any better.
Yeah, or they could just block you, like, straight up just block you.
What would you want to tell someone who is, like, on the apps or is, like, initially dating someone who tells them this? Like, what do you feel like for you? Obviously, you can't speak for everyone, but, like, for you would be, like, the most helpful, or has been the most helpful experience you've had?
I think it's just, like, speak up and ask questions. I think having sex is not the time to stop asking questions. And I really wish I had had that I wish I had had that know-how slash that confidence to ask those questions when I was younger.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times, especially in the queer community, but really with anyone, I think sex can be something that is kind of like, it's what's the word I'm looking for? It's like validating. It's there's like a certain validation, I think, that comes from sex. And I think sometimes that makes us scared to ask questions, scared to like,
you don't want to feel rejected.
Yeah. You don't want to feel rejected and things like that. So I think anytime someone is open to having a dialogue, so if they don't understand what, if they, well, let's start with the very basics. If they don't understand what, how HIV is transmitted or, you know, with the risks and things like that, like, let's start there. But beyond that, if they don't understand like undetectable equals untransmittable, then I'm like, hey, I'm more than happy to have a conversation with you about that, even if it doesn't lead to sex, even if it's just me laying it out for you, giving you the information because you haven't been, you haven't come across it yourself, or you, you just haven't had any interest in looking it up. And I will say and like fully admit, like before I was positive, I was very much one of those people. Like if I were talking to someone on the apps and found out they were positive, I maybe wouldn't ghost them. I'm not really a big ghosting person. I have done it, but it's not something that, it's not like my overall MO.
Listen, we're, none of us are perfect.
We've all none of us are perfect. From time to time.
I would definitely have a lot of apprehension around it. So that's usually what I try to just tell people. But I think what's the most, what was the most eye-opening is we think of HIV stigma as being something that exists in the cis hetero world against queer people. Because obviously at the beginning of the HIV AIDS epidemic, you know, it was actually called GRID. So I think there's always been that.
Oh, shit, that's right.
Yeah, so it was gay-related immune deficiency was what it was originally called. So I think I had always had it in my mind that I was like, oh, well, gay people are cool with people with HIV because it's like something that heavily
like
affected our community.
Yeah.
Yeah, quote-unquote problem in the community and something that like for a long time people thought only we could get.
Which is so ludicrous.
So ludicrous.
Y'all, I mean, for the whole span of time, people have believed all sorts of shit that I'm just like, how did we get here? I mean, we had senators saying at the beginning of Corona, they didn't know you could like catch something if somebody like wasn't symptomatic. And I was like, y'all ever heard of a common cold? So like, I'm not surprised by the ignorance, but reflecting upon it, it seems fucking wild.
Yeah. And like the underline of like all of this is that like there are education on a great many things. And like definitely this topic is severely lacking. And it's like something that I don't know, like schools don't necessarily want to touch in health class, or like maybe we get like a lifetime video, but like, yeah, even within the LGBTQ community, like we don't necessarily know anything more than straight people know about it.
Exactly. Unless you do the research. And I think for me, it was just very eye-opening trying to date. And I would say like for the most part, like I've dated plenty of guys since then. Since finding out, since becoming undetectable, but I just started, you just kind of, once it's a big part of your life, you start to hone in on things like people's profiles will say, you know, looking for this, I'm looking for fit, muscular twink that is clean and DDF. Well, those terms, clean, most of the time, I would say probably 99% of the time, they mean you do not have an STI, which equates that people with STIs are dirty or people with HIV are dirty, which is
that's not okay.
And DDF literally means drug and disease free, which that sounds very abrasive when you're like, yeah, I'm drug and disease free.
And I have seen that on apps, but until this moment right now, did not know what it meant. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's drug and disease free and then clean. So I would like be talking to guys and after a little while on all of my dating profiles, I very much put right there in the open that I am positive, that I'm undetectable, that I'm tested regularly, and that I am very up to date on my sexual health. A lot of guys will just see your picture. They zoom past it. They message you. And I'm like, oh, cool, cool, cool. Did you have a chance? like whatever. We're like talking and they're like, oh, and you're clean, right? And I was like, do you mean like I took a shower? Because yes, I shower regularly. I'm quite hygienic.
Best skincare game in really.
Yeah, I have over $500 worth of skincare product in my medicine cabinet as we speak. So yes, I am clean.
And it does show.
Thank you.
Like it.
But yeah, so I started noticing that more. And so I ended up putting on my profiles that I was like, if you use the term clean in your profile to indicate anything other than hygienic, like I'm not interested.
Not
like
for
I'm just,
you.
I'm yeah. really, I'm not here for that. Like if you want to talk, if you have questions about what you equals you means, shoot me a message. I'm more than happy to talk to you about it. Give you some references. There's, you know, as a big, you know, resource of this podcast, there's Wikipedia.
Yeah.
If you need to take a look.
Has anyone asked you questions about it on apps?
Yeah. All the time, which is awesome. And I always like applaud people that I'm like, thank you for asking. Like,
that's also like, generous of you. Like, give yourself credit there. I feel like that's really generous of you to, because if it were me, I think that that would be something that was emotionally taxing for me to do, would be to like educate other people on something that like they really could seek out for themselves to understand better. In the same way that like educating people on like LGBTQ stuff like can be exhausting, or like if you're not white, like racial explanations are exhausting. I don't know. So like, yes, that's cool that they're asking you, but like, also, I think it's much cooler of you that you're willing to answer.
No, yeah, I appreciate that. And I would say like I started getting that way about a year after I found out. And, you know, in my case, like I was very lucky. I found out very early after being I found out very early after getting the virus into my body. So I became undetectable after like 6 months of being on treatment. And I think that also gave me a little bit more confidence in like getting back into the dating world and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I think at the end of the day, it's like, for me, it is really exhausting sometimes. And there's a lot, there are moments where people, I see it on profiles. And it just like pisses me off. Like I literally sometimes will click on a guy's profile and I'm just like, fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, fuck off. Mm. Like, block. Like I won't even talk to him. I just like see the word clean in his profile and I'm like, fuck you, and just like block him. But I think
that's honest. Like
I wish I were a bigger person and didn't let it bother me all the time sometimes, but like at the end of the day, it's like I try to be as open with it as I can.
Well, to be honest though, hearing like the referral of someone who's not positive of using this syntax of clean, like it feels a little pejorative.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's
like
reducing it feels you. It's reducing like you to your status also. Like
yeah, for sure.
It tells you, I think, kind of immediately that person maybe doesn't even see you as a whole person. If like,
yeah, quote unquote, this is my gay friend.
Yeah, that part definitely sucks, but I think, I don't know, I just, the more I've done research and the more I've like seen it within our own community, that's where to me I was like, we're saying this about people, our people, like there people that are in the LGBTQ community are being prejudiced against people within their own community.
That and happens like, a lot. Yeah. People don't understand that, but I feel like with even like the like additions of like trans to the LG, or well, we added B and then T, and like those were big struggles and fights. And so like I think from the outside it's easy to think like, oh, the queer community is like so accepting of each other and stuff, but like no, we're just people with the same poor education as everyone else, and like we've tons of stigmas amongst each other. All kinds of lesbians hate other kinds of lesbians, and like it's a whole thing. So
oh yeah, there's the old stereotype that gays and lesbians can't be friends,
which is frustrating because I have more gay male friends.
It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Listen, I try to love everyone within my community. Obviously, we all have our stereotypes and our prejudices, but things we all have to work on. But yeah, I just, as I started seeing that, I just realized like, okay, this is like, I need to be more open when someone's like messaging me and asking me questions and not be so annoyed with it. And like I said before, sometimes there's some days where I'm just like, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to talk to you. Like, no. But yeah, that's kind of what it's been like in terms of dating. But
yeah,
big ups to both of you for letting me be the token straight person in this conversation. I really do appreciate.
I forget that I'm gay sometimes. It's I don't know.
You forget that I'm straight?
No, I said I forget that I'm gay. Like, I forget that, like, gay is a thing sometimes. And then,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, well, because you're just a person.
Yeah, and then I, like,
re-remember. I was going to say, I was, kind of would have been delighted if you, like, didn't factor in my sexuality at all. I would be like...
I would love it if we all could do that. But, yeah, right? Then I re-remember that you're attracted to men. And that's fine for you.
And which is really a real bummer.
And I am in the minority for that on this call.
That's true.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
That's true. Well, we talked a lot as your, you know, token straight representative. We talked a lot at the beginning and kind of prompting you to kind of educate us on your narrative of initially finding out about gay trauma being kind of this constant story. I think, you know, we see it in media, even in like the things that are meant to be really delightful and heartwarming. It's has to be like a coming out narrative. Mm. And, you know, I think I hear that from my friends, you know, who identify as gay or queer often, that it's like, oh my God, can we just like let some gay people
live?
Like have let a them normal live? Story that doesn't have to be about telling their mom that they're gay. And do you feel some kind of way about the representation of people with HIV or AIDS in stories that it's like, does this have to be like a trauma narrative? Does it always have to be about finding out and telling people? What are your thoughts on kind of that representation in a storyline?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the times in media, pop culture, film, and art, it's like, a lot of the movies that are out there about people with HIV or people with AIDS are generally, you know, biopics or historical, you know, fiction or nonfiction or whatever, but they're very...
Sure, it's Dallas Buyers Club, it's Harvey Milk, it's...
Yeah, Rent. They're more focused on the... historical fiction. The, you know, the 1980s, the beginning of the HIV/AIDS epidemic here in the United States. And I think... when you're watching a film about that, it's hard for it not to be about the trauma. Right. And so there's movies like The Normal Heart, which is like an HBO film that has Mark Ruffalo and Julia Roberts and several other really fantastic actors. But it really is about the beginning of the epidemic, and then also like the movement to try to protect, you know, gay people from dying from this, because at that time the government had pretty much said, I mean, essentially they handled it the same way we handled COVID, and they're like, it's a hoax. Like it only affects these certain people. So who the fuck cares?
Yeah.
And so that, I think sometimes it's hard to be like, okay, where can we talk about this and it not be so much about the trauma? And I think lately we've seen more media coming out about that. So for example, like the show Pose, it is set in the 1980s and then into the early 90s and the later seasons. And there are several characters that are diagnosed with HIV, but at the same time, that is not what the show centers on. The
and
show
it's not
centers
those characters'
on,
main arc either.
Yeah,
not for
it's
all
not.
Of them. Yeah.
Not for all of them. It really focuses on their lives as people that are a part of this community that are at the same time dealing with having HIV or knowing someone that they love that has HIV. And I think that's where we really need to be focusing more, that we need to have more representation of these characters just living their lives as queer people or people living with HIV, doing perfectly normal things, falling in love and introducing them to their parents without having to be like, oh, I'm gay. This is the person I'm in love with. Now my mom hates me. Now this is happening, blah, 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 blah. And we really haven't seen that in culture really until recently. I think for me, the biggest example would be like Schitt's Creek. For example, there's never a moment where David has to be like coming out to his parents. It's like, it's a very organic depiction of a meet cute, if you will, that would normally be like in like a cis heteronormative kind of romantic film. But David meets Patrick, they fall in love in a very organic way. They, you know what I mean? They're able to have this amazing wedding and have all this stuff. And I think that is really important in media to like depict that. to normalize queer people, queer relationships, the way we live our lives. It's not all about the trauma. It's not all about all of the things we've had to like overcome or the battles we've had to fight to get to where we are. I think we've focused on that so much. And like, yes, that is important to focus on. But at the same time, there needs to be more representation of just people within our community just thriving normally.
Mm-hmm. Well, because like when Modern Family came out years ago, I had some family members who I won't put on too much blast, who were really upset that there was a gay couple in that show that had a child and were just like casually a part of the family. Like it wasn't a thing that they were gay. It was just like integrated normally. And some of my family felt like so threatened by that because of their like marriage and family values. That's in italics. And it was, I think I realized that like they can probably only digest like a gay story or a side character that has like intense trauma or like is having a really hard time, because that like allows everyone to continue to see us as other or continue to like blame us for things that happen to us because of our sexuality. Like, oh, your character died. Like every lesbian character ever dies. Like looking at you, Buffy. And so like to have these characters that get to have their sexuality or their health status as just a part of the fabric of who they are, but it's not the major arc of their storyline, I think is what starts to normalize it. And so like, yes, we have to have these trauma stories, but also like it is so encouraging that finally it's not exclusively that. And I think that that is where we'll see like a shift more among like cis people or also people who don't understand HIV.
Yeah. And to your point, Jamie, I with the representation of the media, it's like, I want to see it as part of character development, not the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like I want the fact that this character is queer and living with HIV. That's just part of their character. That's not what we're going to focus on in the show. That's not going to be the main storyline here. It's just going to be a factor.
Yeah.
It's interesting because listening to you guys both talk about this, so let me just make a quick plug for Degrassi, because you're alluding something to me a little bit. I know, of course, I'm taking it to Degrassi. Listen, guys, I've seen every episode. I've seen every reboot. I've seen all the generations you didn't even know about. But I will say, initially, when you were talking about this, one of the things that crossed my mind is like in early Degrassi, we see Manny have an abortion, and it's like this whole huge traumatic deal. She gets kicked out of the house. It's very wild. And then in Degrassi, Next Class, which does come up after Next Generation, if you're a super fan me, it's on Netflix. You're welcome. We see a character choose to have an abortion, and it is not a big deal.
Whoa.
She makes the choice. She like discloses to who she wants to and who she doesn't. And it happens in like an episode and a half, and then it moves on and it's very normalized, and it's not like her arc for the season. And I found that wildly refreshing. And as a woman, like that was something I really identified with. I was like, oh my God, thank God that we can like show an abortion, not be like a trauma story, and that she was fine.
Yeah.
And that it was the right choice for her. And you talking about this, it's also making me hearken to like how gay characters were portrayed in early Degrassi, that it was like a really big, like traumatic coming out deal, or like, how is this going to go? And there was like joy for that in the time, but also in the later series, I just watched there be gay characters and then people be like, I don't know what I am, but I'm dating this dude. And I was like, that's cool too. And it wasn't their arc. So I think identified a lot with the abortion narrative, because I was like, you know, this felt important to normalize to me. And what you guys are talking about illuminated some other things that I was like, oh, Degrassi did that pretty all right too later.
Well, and if so, like as a woman, like who could become pregnant, seeing exclusively traumatic abortion stories in media tells you that if you had an abortion, it would be traumatic. The same way that a gay person sees all of these traumatic coming out stories and like people being killed, like represented in media, and thinks like, cool, so if I come out, like, this is what happens.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
Or if I get HIV, this is what's going to happen.
And that even more, I think, like, elevated, because we haven't seen that represent. I think we've seen HIV represented the least of those three things that we're talking about.
We have. And I do actually have a couple statistics for you. But I just wanted to say very quickly to both of your points, that when I, you know, talk about a character being queer or having HIV or a character having an abortion and it just being a part of their character development versus the storyline, it's just, to me, it's so poignant because, like, in my life, my big life storyline, I hope to God it's not that I'm just gay and that I have living with HIV.
Jesus Christ.
I really hope that is not the big storyline of my life.
As your friend, that's not the storyline even in the 10 years I've known you, okay? So
that is just a part of my development as a character. That's part of my 100% character development, right?
I love you phrasing it that way because I think everyone can identify with that and, like, has some thing.
Like, what's your 90s plot line of your life if it was, like, reduced to what everyone thought?
You know, Jamie and I joked about this on an episode recently.
Motivational speakers.
We were talking on motivational speakers and we were like, well, what would be, like, the trauma that you would tout that would, like, make you have an interesting backstory? And I was like, well, obviously it would be that I had cancer. This is going to be my come to Jesus moment. And I will say, while it is wildly different than, you know, being gay, I do feel like it's a thing when I tell people. The most uncomfortable thing about it for me is then, like, all of a sudden people, like, think I'm different. Like, people want me to, like, really love God or, like, have some sort of, like, different viewpoint on life. Exactly. And I'm like, wow, you're, like, really putting a lot on this. And while it's not the same as, you know, sexuality or a positive status, I can empathize with the idea of, like, you tell someone something and then they want to put a bunch of shit on you. And then you have to be like, that is not my experience.
Oh, 100%. And it kind of goes back to sometimes, like, in the beginning for me, like, managing other people's emotions around something that's happening to you. And you're just kind of like, listen, I'm going to need you to pull it together because this is not even happening to you. Like,
this
chill.
Is not about you. This is not about you.
Yeah.
I think that's very real. And I guess kind of pivoting from some of, like, the fictional narratives we've just talked about, of, you know, people putting experiences on, you know, you that maybe they've seen represented. I also feel like we have certainly watched that play out in the media over the years of, you know, celebrities or other people with notoriety that have a positive status. And, you know, as the resident only basketball fan on this Zoom
you
call
for
right
sure
now,
are. Yep.
It's me. You're welcome. really trying to, you know, solidify my heterosexual
straight it up.
Qualities.
Yeah. Straight up. That's what your segment alone is called.
Okay. This is welcome to Straight Up, starring only Austin.
Straight Up with a twist.
Yes. I like that. Yeah. That's how I like myself and my martinis. That's factual, actually. So with that said, I feel like as the basketball fan, the most kind of iconic one to me in pop culture was all of the fanfare and madness around Magic Johnson in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. Yep. And for anyone who doesn't know the story or who isn't, you know, a fan of basketball, Magic Johnson is such an interesting one. You know, his positive status was revealed. He retired because of it, and then he unretired, and then he re-retired like 2 weeks later because he cut himself on the basketball court, at which it wasn't even like a cut, he had like a scratch. It's like, you know, a non-contact sport injury, right? And, you know, people like got very concerned about it. He had this whole conversation on Oprah. It was very loud that everybody is like, well, Magic's, you know, gay or he's bisexual. So they're bringing in talking about his sexuality too, because it was, again, to our earlier point about Grid, this was probably one of the first times it was like, oh, you mean people who have sex with women who are, you know, cis straight men can contract HIV. And so that was like a whole novel experience. Then there was all the celebrity drama that people were like saying that like Isaiah Thomas was the one who told everyone, which brings in like rumors and people disclosing for you. I mean, honestly, like truly fucking madness. And so Magic Johnson, this plays out very publicly. Some people think he's a hero for, you know, saying like, hey, this is who I am and I have this status. And then years later, another positive guest is on Oprah. And Oprah's like, well, this is so great because like you're like Magic Johnson, you're doing fine. And the guy goes, listen, Oprah, Magic Johnson is richer than God. And obviously, like from the early 90s to now, the treatment for HIV and, you know, PrEP as well have become more affordable. But I wouldn't say it's like a, you know, a super affordable or like accessible thing financially by any means, especially if you're uninsured. And so this guy is like, listen, like, yeah, Magic Johnson is doing okay with HIV, but that is like not everyone who has HIV. And since the Magic Johnson kind of fanfare and then the clapback and Oprah feeling educated publicly on her show, then we've heard, you know, people come forward and disclose a positive status. I think most recently, I think about Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye and, you know, him coming out and disclosing that he was positive and really wanting to destigmatize it. And I just think like, wow, for a lot of people who know no one who has HIV are very removed from this experience. They've got the movies that we in the television narratives, and then the shift to quote unquote real life is, you know, Magic Johnson, a star from Queer Eye, different personalities. And for some people that probably feels more like real life because it is someone's real life. But how do you kind of process people who, you know, are disclosed or open about their positive status, who are celebrities, kind of maybe being the like the narrative that is put on you or what people's expectation of your experience might be like?
I don't know if it necessarily puts any sort of expectation on me. I think that the more people that are open about their status, and especially celebrities, because obviously they're the ones that are in people's homes, like on their television, on their Netflix. And, you know, Magic Johnson is a great example because he truly was that very first notable person that was hetero to, you know, let the world know that he was HIV positive. And that really started to change the narrative around HIV, how it spread, who can get it. You know, it wasn't just gay people and intravenous drug users anymore, which was what it was categorized as in the 80s and throughout most of the early 90s. But I think having celebrities and notable people be open about it is so important to the dialogue and changing people's perspective. There is a statistic, and I could be getting the number wrong, but that 60% of Americans get their information on HIV and AIDS from the media. So just to go back to my point about celebrities and people with a platform that are HIV positive and being open about that, that is truly like the biggest way we can change and shape people's perceptions of what it actually means to be HIV positive and what that actually looks like.
100%.
It is so important because it really does start to open up people's eyes. And I think some people to call out are like, if we want to go chronologically, like let's first talk about Princess Diana, who was not HIV positive, but she shook a man's hand that was positive, and people lost their shit. Their fucking minds. Because that's how taboo it was.
We forget about that.
We do.
We forget about the fact that people lost their mind that she touched people who had AIDS.
It's like a leprosy thing. A person.
It was treated like a leprosy.
Yes, was truly treated like a leprosy thing. And then, you know, if we want to get into like, you know, youth culture of the 90s and MTV culture, let's talk about Pedro Zamora from The Real World San Francisco. This is like a man, the first time in reality television, who was very open about his status. He was a huge advocate for sexual health and having safer sex, using condoms. Unfortunately, you know, he lost his battle to HIV and, you know, developed into AIDS. But he, I mean, was recognized by Bill Clinton for his contribution to, you know, global health. And, you know, you can keep going on and on and on. You know, you mentioned JVN, which I think is another really amazing person to be open and honest about that because of the platform he has today. So I think it's just the more people that are open about it and are willing to talk about it and have a dialogue, I think the more normalized it is for people. Here's some, like, these statistics are a little old and I apologize. I was doing some quick research earlier, but in 2011, so 10 years ago, we'll say 9.5 years ago,
we'll say 45%
of Americans that were polled said they would be uncomfortable having people with HIV prepare their food.
Whoa.
Wow.
And 36% of people that were polled would be uncomfortable having a roommate with HIV.
Whoa.
This was just 9.5, 10 years ago. This is 2011.
Yeah, it's not a long time ago.
So, you know, obviously in 10 years, we've made a lot of strides with the queer representation. And for example, in the 2018-2019 TV season, there were 857 LGBTQ characters on TV that year.
There aren't enough. Huge win.
Huge win for the queer community. Mm-hmm. But only 7 of those characters were portrayed as being HIV positive.
Wow. Then I guess we like already talked about almost all of them except for Transparent.
Right. Exactly. So it's like, we're,
that is stark.
And that's why I think the more people that are open about it, and that's why for me, it's so important to be open and willing to have a dialogue with people is because that's the only way we're going to normalize this and end this stigma around having a positive status or having an STI at all.
At all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this episode is, you know, we're talking about, like, you know, from my perspective and things like that, but really having an STI, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's happened. I can't remember. I think it was from like Girls or something like that. She gets HPV and then she tweets like all adventurous women do. You know what I mean? Like, I just think it's like, we have to normalize the conversation around sexual health and around STIs, around HIV. Cause it's just, if we don't, it's just going to continue to be so problematic. Mm-hmm. And so for me, to circle back to Austin's question, I applaud any celebrity that is willing to come out and let the public know about that. I think it just helps the conversation. I think it helps our cause in trying to normalize things within our society.
I love that. I love the point that you're making because I think a lot of times I think about like early gay representation on television or something. And it's like, not every gay man is just like someone who like really loves Broadway, but that was kind of the only version for a while. And I recognize that it's positive that we have now like a wider variety of personality types who identify as gay on television. And I think I worry sometimes that it's like, oh, it's going to be this projection. But I think you're making a really good point that people disclosing, in fact, you know, lends itself to creating like a greater diversity amongst folks who are positive. Because to your point, yeah, people are like, oh, you mean straight people can get this? When Magic came out with, you know, positive status. So I think, yeah, that was something truly I hadn't wrapped my head all the way around. But I think that's important and comforting to hear in some ways. And obviously, like, to earlier points, like, no one owes anyone their status. But I think, you know, what you're talking about makes a lot of sense to me.
No, and I don't think anyone owes anyone anything when it comes to your health.
Yeah, of course.
If you're open and willing to talk about it, please do. Share, even if you're not a celebrity, even if you're not on a national global platform, whatever, even if you're not Jonathan Van Ness, being open with the people that are in your own circle can make a bigger impact than you realize. Because
100%.
it just takes touching that one person in your inner circle, and then they can kind of spread what they've learned from their experience with you onto someone else in another circle. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. And I think that's just what we have to do. And I think that's really truly the only way we're going to like unstigmatize being HIV positive.
Because it humanizes it. Yeah. And it makes you a real person in the way that like, my grandma is okay with gay people now because she knows me and she knows that I'm gay. And so that's like changed her opinion because I'm like a very real person that she knows in 3D, not just like on the news or on TV. And like then she's also changing her friends' minds. And so in that way, it does become kind of exponential.
Mm. Yeah.
Thomas, thanks for doing this. Thanks for being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I was so excited to do this and talk to you guys. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I will plug it all day, any day. I let people know all the time. It was in my top podcasts listened to for last year on Spotify.
Oh my God, your Wrapped list.
Yeah, it was on my Wrapped list. So listen, super excited to be here. And thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I mean, thrilled to have you. And just, I think, you know, I'm comfortable speaking for both of us when I say that we're just really humbled and grateful that you were willing to have this conversation with us.
Absolutely.
And, you know, make it available for folks that listen to us. And just like as your friend, I love you very much. Let the record show.
Love you too. Love you both. Yeah. Like I said, I feel like I know Jamie really, really well just through this podcast. And to throw it back to like our astrological signs, I'm glad she finally came around to Tauruses because that's my sun sign.
I did, and I will tell you that I always, now that I know that you're a Taurus, and I did find out that you were a Taurus kind of after I was coming around, but I always think of you when I prepare the Taurus reading. Always. Aww. I'm thinking of you. And you have an Aquarius moon that I learned tonight, so we have that sort of in common.
I love this. Well, kind of before we pivot into a verbal game, I want to give you, Thomas, the opportunity if, you know, our listeners or, you know, anyone who stumbles upon this podcast could have, you know, one takeaway from our conversation with you. What would you want it to be?
No pressure.
I think for me, it would just be open to learning new things. Be open to like allowing your opinion or your stereotype or whatever to be changed. And if you're unsure about something, ask. Just ask someone. And to anyone that's like in the gay community or queer community, LGBTQ, if you don't understand U equals U, or you just have questions about HIV, safe sex, anything, reach out, you know, just do your research. Mm-hmm. I've always, you know, I'll say this again, but I just think having sex is not the time to stop asking questions. And
for anyone ever.
For anyone. Correct. Ever. Yeah. Gay, straight, unicorn, whoever.
Kinky, whatever.
Yeah. Just like don't stop asking questions. It is 100% okay to go to someone's house to hook up with them. And then ask them what their status is. And if they don't know, it's okay to go home. It's not a big deal. It's okay to not do it. Don't worry about it.
Mm, I love that. I love that. Well, on that final note, I think it's time to pivot into a verbal game. So
cue the vibraphone.
In the spirit of, you know, telling our own narratives, which I really think is what you did in this conversation, and while celebrating perhaps, you know, the celebs or narrative arcs that resonate with us and, you know, feel like do a service to folks's better understanding, right? And, you know, really throwing to the wayside the versions that don't, I thought perhaps we could all talk a little bit about how we'd like to be represented in our own narrative. And by that, I mean, I think we should talk about who should play us in the movie of our life.
Okay. All right.
I mean, no pressure here, right? I feel like it's a lot of pressure. And I feel like Jamie and I talk about this like
from time to time.
Ooh. From time to time, but I don't think we've ever talked about it on the show. And Thomas, I don't think I've ever talked about this. So I was like a little bit excited, and I'm here to claim a narrative and for us to kind of guess it. And for me, I kind of have a three-way tie, perhaps. One is like a recent player. but I feel like maybe as two really good friends of mine, I'd like you guys to perhaps help me deduce a little
bit. For sure.
So for the record, I'd like to say the ages of these people, like, we have to kind of throw them out because it's like, when are they making this biopic? Like, we can't know.
Irrelevant.
You need like a young version. I'm open to, like, it doesn't have to be real time. And so that said, someone, because of like my many hair colors and looks, I have had moments where I've been like, aesthetically, I would like to be played by Claire Danes. However, But on my personality front, I've really felt like I should be played by Lisa Kudrow. Like, I just...
Yeah, I knew
that. I just really...
Yes.
I just want this for myself. It is, like, stroking the humorous side of my ego a little bit, for sure. Like, I'd love to be played by her. Mm-hmm. But Jamie recently threw me a curveball in that she is of the belief that if age is not a factor, I should be played by Glenn Close. And I have never been more flattered in my life.
I stand by it. I think she should play you in all years. Teen Austin, 20s Austin, everyone is Glenn Close.
Listen,
what does even teen Glenn Close look like?
It'd be her now. Listen, she would just be made up like you as a teenager. Sorry, Thomas.
No, I was just going to say, I love Glenn Close.
Me too.
And Austin, I don't know if you know this or not, but she actually recently donated all of her costumes to the Sage Collection at IU.
Oh my God.
Our alma mater. Listen, I'm not trying to say that Thomas and I were, you know, apparel merch majors back in a heyday and, you know, somehow loosely affiliated with the costume collection at Indiana University, but I'm deeply passionate about this. I love Glenn Close so much. Oh my God. Jamie, do you have feelings on this? Do you have initial gut reactions? Jamie stands by Glenn Close for me, so I'm here for that. Thomas, do you have any perspectives?
You said Lisa Kudrow, and I was like, okay, yes. I see Lisa Kudrow in, like, okay. I see Lisa Kudrow now. Okay, now, yep. Who she is right now playing Austin in her, like, mid-40s to early 50s.
Oh my God.
That's great.
I'm so appreciative.
As far as Glenn Close goes, for the sheer... the sheer range of that woman.
Exactly.
I see Glenn Close playing Austin Williams throughout her life. And I've known Austin through, I would say, most of her major hair transitions.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah. So, I think I can stand by Jamie.
I feel like I have range, you know?
Yeah.
Listen, okay.
When I met Austin, she had hot red hair and bangs.
True.
And it was awesome. I have pictures. It's great.
We all have pictures.
Oh yeah.
Listen, every millennial has that one friend who had bright red hair and bangs, and I'm happy to be that friend for both of you.
Wow, that's really true.
I know.
Wow. Everyone that's listening, reflect on what friend that is for you. That's all.
Okay, Jamie, who's playing you in your biopic?
So classically, I think stated that I would appreciate it if Chloe Grace Moretz could play me as in my teen years, in my troubled 20s, maybe.
I see this.
I don't think that we look alike, but I think that she has an androgynous but skewing femme energy, even though she is seemingly straight. I think that she could capture something about like... maybe like how my gayness made me like hold my body through my life before I came out. She has like a stiffness to her shoulders sometimes that makes me wonder if she's closeted. And I don't think that she is, but something about like the way that she moves her body, I think like I identify in my younger self.
Mm. You know what I'll say with this? I respectfully, for someone to play you in your early 20s, they really need to be able to like unleash just wildness and I feel like she has it in her. I'm open to that.
I think she does,
I didn't know
too.
This. She was on the table, but I feel like she could do it.
I don't even
like,
really
we need
know
someone
else,
who could, like, maybe have been in Spring Breakers, like, really crush that role to, like, play you in their early 20s.
Yeah, maybe I'm trying to think who, like, someone who's been in, like, a lot of, like, indie movies, but has, like, quite a bit of range, because it's tempting.
Mae Whitman.
Mae
Whitman
would
that's
a really
you.
Good idea.
That
oh,
is good.
I want
yeah.
Mae Whitman to play you. Oh, I just thought of this. I hope you're flattered because I love her.
Yeah, no, I think that's maybe who I would pick. I'm trying to think if there's like an older person. And
I know all of my people are like older than me.
That's okay. No, I wish I had like an older choice. Like to see maybe Alan Arkin take a stab at it. See what that would be like. Really take a
I
left
love
turn.
That for you.
But yeah, those are those are my answers. Thomas, you've had like some time to churn on this now.
I have. okay, so if I was gonna pick someone. So for me, I really would, if someone was going to make a movie about me, I'd really want it to start like in like the college years, like my 20s. Because, listen, you know, I was a very kind of an insecure bit of a mess back then. And
we all were,
but like, listen, I was just like real, real insecure. So Jonathan Groff is who I would pick as... So the way he portrays the character of Patrick in the show, the HBO show Looking, I'm getting very niche and specific on you guys.
No, that's fine.
That is who I would have portray me in my early 20s. Now,
honestly, Thomas Bauer, if you didn't get niche and specific, I don't think it's accurate.
Okay,
like,
well,
I feel like the people who play you should be a little niche.
Yeah. So listen, I'm going to go a little further. So now
let's go.
So if we're going to play either current Thomas or how I think I will be in my middle age, you know, 40s, early 50s.
Okay. Then we're gonna sweaters, Nantucket. Go on.
So we're gonna go with Stanley Tucci, a la The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh
yes,
purely for the attitude.
Yeah,
the wit. I like to think that I can be quite witty and sarcastic. And
the facial expressions that are sometimes removed and then sometimes very apparent.
Yeah.
That's you.
Yeah. So I think those would be my two. So I would pick Jonathan Groff to play younger me. He looks nothing like me. Where I'm not even picking people
Doesn't
that look
matter.
Like me. I'm just picking people that like I vibe with. And and Jonathan Groff is also, you know, a fellow gay, so I'm all about that. If he's gonna play me, I'm, you know, I'd be a gay character, so there you go. And then Stanley Tucci to play older me.
I love
but Stanley Tucci in The Devil Wears Prada. Let me change that. Stanley Tucci playing opposite of Meryl Streep in anything is how I would like to be portrayed.
Your guys. Oh, wait, no, you're Glenn Close, not Meryl Streep. I'm sorry, I was going to say your movies could overlap,
you
but that's not.
Glenn Close and Meryl Streep have beautiful moments. Well, generationally, it's wrong. They're both in the movie Evening, but Meryl Streep is in the older version, and Mamie Gumner, her daughter, is in like the earlier years with Glenn Close and also
and
my
Danes.
Other person, Claire Danes. I don't want to get on a high horse about how much I love the movie Evening and how much most of my friends didn't enjoy
For
it,
years.
But I'll tell you about it all day.
I know you are. I have seen the movie, and I know that you love it. So
it's
and that's all. You know, we can leave it there. Austin really loved that movie.
I really love that film. Well, on these notes, in the deepest gratitude to our friend Thomas, again, thank you for being here. As always, you can find us on the internet. You can get at us via email at whyyourlikethispod@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at whyyourlikethispod. And you can find us on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And good morning, good night, good evening. We'll see you on Thursday.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.